Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. My guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert, PhD, DAPT, and he's a regular guest on the show. I have him on about every month because he tells us about different toxic substances, how they're toxic, where we're exposed to them, what the dangers are, because we need to know, living in a toxic world, we need to know where these toxic chemicals are, because the whole point is to be able to recognize them and not have them be in your life so that your body can be healthier. We talk about on this show, we talk about detox, getting the chemicals out of your body, but it's better to not put them in the first place. And today we're going to talk about mercury, and that's a very common toxic metal. But it's not something, I mean, most people know that there's mercury in your dental fillings, but where else is there mercury? So we're going to find out those things. We're going to find out how it affects your body. Hi, Dr. Gilbert.
Hi, Deborah. Good to speak to you again.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
Oh, very good. We're having a fine day here in Seattle.
Good. Is the sun shining or is it raining in Seattle?
Well, it was mostly gray. So there's a little bit of sun peeking out, but it's been gray. It really rained last night, so it's sort of back to the rains in Seattle.
Yeah, we had a really big storm here, too, yesterday. So let's talk about mercury. I see that you have a lot of information about it in your book, A Small Dose of Toxicology. And let me just remind readers that you can go to Dr. Gilbert's website, which is toxipedia.org, TOXIPEDIA.org. And you can get a copy of his book, A Small Dose of Toxicology, for free. And it's an excellent book for everybody to read. It's written in a way that's very easy to read. And the information is organized really well. And it's just a good book to start with to learn the basics about toxicology. So tell us about mercury.
So the first thing I want to say is that if you have your listeners have mercury thermometers, they should immediately take them to the hazardous waste people and get rid of mercury thermometers. That's the most common source of inorganic mercury in the home is mercury thermometers. They really are hazardous. If you break one, one of the problems with inorganic mercury, the silver stuff, I'm sure many of us have probably played with a little bit of that at one time or another growing up, particularly the older generations. But it is hazardous because it evaporates in the air at room temperature, and you inhale that mercury. And you really don't want to do that. So I urge your listeners to take their mercury-based thermometers, any mercury item, because they actually make toys with mercury in them, to hazardous waste and dispose of it properly.
So what about...
General, I'll just quick rundown of mercury. Okay. It's a really interesting, complex metal. It's liquid at room temperature, so it's also very dense. It's about 13 times the weight of water. So you can actually sit on mercury. If you look at the slides I have a slide set that's associated with a chapter in my book. There's actually a slide of a gentleman sitting on a big vat of mercury. So wow. I can't imagine what he's inhaling. But it's pretty remarkable stuff. You actually float on mercury. So mercury metal is used for many things. As you mentioned, it's in our teeth. It's also a favorite among alchemists because mercury adheres to gold or gold adheres to mercury. So if you have a little silver in a pan that you've mixed gold with, you can heat that pan, evaporate the mercury. I wouldn't do this at home. It's really hazardous. But gold appears. So you literally appear to be turning a base metal, such as mercury, into gold. But in reality, you weren't doing that, but that was something the alchemists did. So mercury is used in gold mining, still is widely used in that, because it adheres, so they would wash the mine tailings over mercury and then evaporate the mercury to get the gold out of that. Very hazardous business, not good for the environment, not good for the miners. And the problem with mercury in general is once it gets in the atmosphere, it gets into the land or into the water, bacteria turn into methylmercury, so they're trying to detoxify that mercury. They turn into methylmercury, then it bioaccumulates and biomagnifies and moves up the food chain, and we consume the mercury. Like many of the fish we consume, particularly the fish on high on the food chain, swordfish, for example, have high mercury content. So that's organic mercury. And organic mercury, you absorb the majority of that mercury is absorbed in the gut, so it's readily absorbed and ends up in the brain. Where if you eat a lot of mercury, a lot of tuna fish, for example, and there are well-documented cases in adults as well as children, which we're really concerned about, you absorb that mercury and affects your nervous system. So that's a very fast rundown of mercury and a lot more to talk about.
Okay, let me ask you some questions. First, could you explain again about the difference between inorganic mercury and organic mercury, and tell us which one is the one that appears in nature, and then how does that one turn into the other one?
So both mercuries appear are naturally occurring. For example, inorganic mercury is the silver mercury. It's the metal, and it's concentrated. It's really fun stuff to play with. There was a movie about it. One of the Terminator movies had the mercury man, I guess you call him, that could change form and shape. So it's been widely used. So mercury occurs. And when a volcano goes off, there's good graphs of this. The mercury is produced from that because it's a naturally occurring element. So one of the biggest releases of mercury occurs in some of the large volcano eruptions that occur. But it's also the majority of mercury that's put out in the environment is done by human use, because mercury is a very good metal. It's used for generating or conducting electricity. It's thermometers, obviously, blood pressure cuffs. If you remember, you got your blood pressure taken when you went to the doctor, you have a big slug of mercury. Most of those have been removed and recycled. But it's also widely used in different forms of treatments that are not good for you either. It's used in, like I mentioned, gold mining. So it's widely used. The problem is when that inorganic, that mercury quicksilver is called, one of the names for it, gets into the environment, it's toxic. And just one of the uses for that inorganic mercury was in felting. The Mad Hatter, you might remember Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
The Mad Hatter was actually poisoned by inhaling mercury. So you can inhale that mercury vapor and go to the brain. Not good for you. So when it gets out of the environment, though, bacteria, because it is toxic, try to detoxify that mercury and add a methyl group, a CH3 group to mercury, so we have organic mercury. So organic mercury, it moves by the bacteria, up to snails, up to small organisms, into the fish, so it moves up the food chain, where it's concentrated in the muscle of the fish. And we consume the muscle. You can't cook the fish and get rid of it. We consume that muscle. Like I mentioned, there are certain fish, swordfish, shark, some brands of tuna fish, teal, are hazardous because they are long-lived fish, and they concentrate the mercury in their muscle. We consume that muscle, and we absorb about, like I mentioned, 90% of the methyl mercury, the organic mercury in fish, and that's then moved to the brain. So there's two forms of mercury, the silver mercury, which is many of us have seen, and the organic mercury, which we can't see, but is most likely in the fish we consume. And that's where the majority of us are exposed to mercury, is from fish consumption. And mercury is, and like I mentioned, in volcanoes, but it's also in coal. And this is very important, because when we burn coal, we release mercury in the atmosphere. We know how to control some of that, but many of the old coal-fired utility plants do not have good pollution control devices on them, so they release mercury in the atmosphere. And there's some good maps from U.S. Geological Survey showing eastern United States has more problems with mercury because of the prevailing winds blow to the east.
So you mentioned
another source, a very important source of mercury. And a lot of coal is burned in China. You've probably heard about that. In China, burning a lot of coal for electric power generation. They do not have pollution control devices on there. And that mercury ends up contaminating the oceans and blows toward the west coast of the United States. So mercury is widely distributed. And that inorganic mercury that comes out of coal-fired plants eventually turns into organic mercury and is taken up by fish and other organisms.
So I want to ask
another little bit of history on mercury.
I want to ask you quickly, because we need to go to break in about 30 seconds, but you mentioned taking thermometers to the hazardous waste because if they break, then you're breathing the mercury. Now, what happens when I'm going to let you answer this after the break. I'll ask the question. What happens when you break a compact fluorescent light bulb and there's mercury inside those? And we'll get Dr. Gilbert's answer right after this. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert. His website is toxipedia.org, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert, a toxicologist and author of the wonderful book, A Small Dose of Toxicology, which you can get for free on his website at toxipedia.org. Now, right before the break, I asked Dr. Gilbert, what about if you drop a compact fluorescent light bulb? People have asked me that question because it's being so heavily promoted that we all need to be using toxic fluorescent light bulbs, but people drop them. I was even present once when somebody dropped one, and I said, oh, you need to clean this up properly. And she said, oh, no, well, I'll just put it in the garbage. And she picked it up with a paper towel and put it in the garbage. So what about that exposure to mercury?
Yeah, that's been a bit of a controversy. Compact fluorescent light bulbs have a little bit of mercury in it, and they have milligrams of mercury, so very small amounts. And they've been reducing that down, so the more modern compact fluorescents have even less mercury in them. But you can also get lamps that are LED lights, and I encourage people to look into LED lights, which have longer lifetime, and even use less electricity. But the compact fluorescent light bulbs, to clean them up, and when you dispose of them and they burn out, you really need to take them to hazardous waste site again and dispose of them properly. Because even that small amount of mercury, you don't just want to throw it in the trash and get it back into the environment. And I think that's one thing that many of the states and the federal have struggled with, is how to dispose of these lights. So if you do break one at home, don't use your vacuum cleaner. I would recommend, you know, sweeping it up and even getting some tape, like some masking tape, and sort of adhering the debris to the tape and then wad it up. And if you're really good about it, you can take that to hazardous waste site. If not, you know, I recommend just throwing it away, because you really want to get it out of your house and clean it up as best as possible. But you really, the best option is, again, prevent things, is not to drop your fluorescent light bulbs, and take really good care of them. Take them to hazardous waste when you want to dispose of them, and clean them up as best as possible in the home. If you break a thermometer, the same thing. Use like duct tape to clean up the little drops of mercury. Do not use a vacuum cleaner, because the vacuum cleaner takes that up, and the hot air will vaporize the mercury and sort of blow it out the back of the vacuum cleaner. So do not vacuum up mercury. Take duct tape, stick the mercury to the tape, and then take that to hazardous waste to dispose of it properly.
Good. I totally agree with all of that. So tell us what happens in your body when you're exposed to mercury.
So mercury, we learned a lot about mercury, and I'll just a little history here from Minamata Bay in Japan. And this was in the 1950s when a large chemical plant was releasing mercury into the bay, the Minamata Bay. And at that time, in the 50s, it was thought that, well, the solution to pollution is dilution. So you just throw stuff out into the oceans, a huge ocean will go away.
Oh, my God.
And we've now learned again and again, we've learned this countless times, that's just not the case. And we must be really careful with our environment, whether it's plastics we're throwing away, the big plastic gyros out in the ocean, or throwing mercury into the environment. So the problem was, the fish consume the mercury. As I mentioned, it turns into methylmercury by accumulation of fish. So at first, the cats were getting sick, and then because this was a fishing community, so the people started getting sick, and the kids in particular were affected. And this is well documented, the Minamata disease, it was called at the time. So it really drove home the point that the placenta is not a great barrier to toxicants. So the mercury moved across the placenta. And actually, further research years later determined that the placenta is actually a sink for mercury. So, the fetus is actually a sink for the mercury. And so the fetus will have higher mercury levels than the mom. This is very important, because that exposure affects the developing nervous system. So this is a great lesson learned in the 50s. The placenta is not a great barrier, and they really, really have to be careful of this. And even small amounts of mercury are hazardous. Large amounts are extremely hazardous. So from then on, we really focused on is there a safe level of mercury to consume, and how do you regulate mercury? There's been many studies on this, but low levels of methylmercury exposure are particularly hazardous to children, affect the developing nervous system, causing neurological disorders, reduced intelligence, and more subtle things like depression, lack of sleep, headache, things like that. But the real hazard is for developing children and the developing fetus and developing nervous system and reduction in intellectual ability. And that's I just want to mention, that's with organic mercury, methylmercury. That's similar hazards with, and slightly different with, inorganic mercury. And it can also affect adults, so don't let the adults off the hook. People that consume a lot of tuna fish or a lot of high mercury content fish can have a variety of sleep disturbances, headache, fatigue, lack of coordination, muscle and joint pain, hair thinning, heart rate disturbance, hypertension, tremor, all these things sort of come along with consumption of mercury. For example, just a little case study here, a 64-year-old anthropologist who ate fish 9 times a week, often choosing tuna, swordfish, sea bass, suffered chronic fatigue, headache, mercury hair loss, and hair loss, had a blood lead mercury level of 21 micrograms per liter. And the EPA recommends about 5 and even less for women of childbearing age because of the fetus is a potential sink. So women should consume and be much more careful of their mercury consumption. So it's complicated. So it's a long story, and there's a lot of fish advisories on mercury for different states, and the FDA weighs in on this. We can get into regulatory stuff if you'd like.
Well, I'm just kind of I'm thinking about when I was a child, the first time I ate fish, I spit it out. And I have rarely eaten fish or seafood. I'll occasionally eat shrimp, but I just don't eat fish at all from any source. And I think it's because my body just said, no, there's something wrong with this. And
I don't want to discourage fish consumption because fish is a really important source of protein and omega-3 fatty acids.
Yeah,
so
I know.
But we manage to contaminate a really important food source for many, many people of the world. So there are good fish to eat. For example, salmon is better because it's not as long-lived. It's not at the high end of the food chain. So fish like salmon will have lower mercury levels in them. And you have to just look at the list of fish, particularly recommended by your state and where you're fishing, and look at what fish have lower mercury content in them. But fish is a really good source of protein, omega-3 fatty acids, and important. And the FDA and others recommend the small amounts of fish per week.
I know. And there's also fish oil. And for years, I didn't take fish oil, but I just I did another show with somebody who all we talked about was fish oil. And I learned... I'll talk more about this when we come back from the break because we're actually running over. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert, and his website is toxipedia.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert. And his website is toxipedia.org, and he's also the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, which I think you all know by now I highly recommend. So before the break, I started talking about fish oil, and what I wanted to say is that a couple of weeks ago, I did a show with Pamela Seefeld, who's a pharmacologist, and she explained to us about how when they make high-quality fish oil, and I'm not talking about the cheap stuff, but something that you would get, you know, a high-quality medical-grade fish oil, that they're only taking that oil from the very smaller fish, like sardines and anchovies, and when they process it, they're processing it so finely that there's no protein from the fish in it, but there's also no pollutants in it. So if you want to take fish oil, and I actually started taking fish oil for the first time after listening to her interview, and it's such a good source of all kinds of things. It does good things for your body, and I can tell a difference already. I think I should have been taking fish oil all the time, but I was afraid to take it because of mercury and not liking to eat fish. But I think people, if you get a good quality fish oil, you should feel confident that it's okay to take it. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that, yes, I think that can be a good supplement. I think you do have to be careful what fish oil you use because the older, the bigger the fish, the more mercury they tend to have in them. So, you know, anchovies, smaller fish that have shorter lifespans will have less mercury in them. But you also have to, with fish oils, be worried about organic pollutants such as PCBs and pesticides or chlorinated pesticides because they're in the fat. So fish oil can accumulate some of those compounds depending on where the fish are sourced from. And PCBs are widely distributed in the environment, used in transformers. So some of the rivers like the Hudson has elevated levels. There's an area around Seattle called the Duwamish area where there's also PCBs in the water system and in the sediment. So you have to be, you know, be cautious about that. But, you know, my view is everything in moderation, including moderation. So,
I agree. So tell us more about mercury.
So mercury, a little bit about mercury. And I just want to get into a little bit of toxicology of mercury. Because it is widely regulated around the world. And there was just a treaty passed on mercury, the Minamata Convention Treaty, and trying to limit the transportation and sale of inorganic mercury around the world because it's a byproduct of mining. There's a lot of mercury in the environment. And one of the problems is where to store the mercury that we've accumulated. It's widely used in, like, the nuclear industry, so many sites are contaminated with mercury. So that's, and old mines are contaminated with mercury. So it is something that we've managed to spread around the environment. So on a regulatory side, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration sets a level that fish should not have more than one part per million of methylmercury in the fish. And this may sound like a very small amount, but it's really not. Particularly if you look at what the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency sets as a reference dose. So a reference dose is how much you can consume on a daily basis over a lifetime and expect no hazardous consequences. So the U.S. EPA sets a level of 0.1 micrograms per kilogram per day. So that's 0.1 micrograms per kilogram per day. So it's related to your body weight.
So, and, like, could you just translate that into a measurement that, like, most people don't know what a kilogram is and a microgram. So, like, would that be how many teaspoons?
That's a really great question. So it's how many pieces of fish you consume, and that depends on how much mercury is in that fish. And that's what the FDA tries to regulate with that one part per million, or it's actually 1 milligram per kilogram in the fish. So a kilogram is about 2.2 pounds, so you can have 1 milligram, which is a fairly small amount, one part per million in the fish. But if you look at what the EPA recommends as you can consume, that 0.1 micrograms per kilogram, it takes a little fussing around with the various nomenclature here, and you convert your body weight into kilograms, and then figure out how much fish you can consume, or how much mercury you can consume, how much fish you can consume. It's not very much. So that's a problem. You cannot consume a lot of fish that have a lot of mercury in them. So swordfish, shark, some tuna fish like old tuna can have fairly high, above one part per million mercury in the flesh of the fish, and you rapidly go over the amount you're safely consume per day. And this has been shown. We just published a paper on this a couple years ago for adults consuming this. It's even more hazardous for children and women of childbearing age. So it's a tough one, and the U.S. EPA is actually reviewing its RFD and trying to come up with a new standard. And some people, myself included, are pushing for lower standards. And we would like to see the FDA both be a little bit more aggressive about monitoring the mercury content of fish, but also lowering the one part per million to at least 0.5. Canada has a level of 0.5 ppm of mercury for retail fish and seafood.
So do they test the fish for mercury levels?
Not usually.
Okay, so I think a good idea would be, and you can tell me what you think of this, I think they should be testing fish, like, when they come off the ship, and find out what's the parts per million, and they should put that information on the package.
I think that'd be great. It'd be tough to do for a lot of the fish because there's huge amounts of fish come through, but at least doing more testing and labeling the fish in the stores as to what might be the mercury content, like the tuna fish, and which tuna might you expect have higher levels of mercury in them, and which fish will have a lower concentration of mercury.
Even if they didn't tell you, we tested this and here's the exact number. If the fish packages had a little sticker on them that says, you know, this is a high mercury fish or a low mercury fish,
right.
I think that would help a lot because there are lists that you can get. I mean, you could just what would you look on? How would you search for that? Probably low mercury fish list or something like that. You would get, because I know that there are a lot of lists.
Yeah, Washington State's got a good one.
Yeah.
There's a number of websites that out there that that will list the mercury and recommend fish consumption. There's flyers on it, all kinds of information.
Yeah, so if you're eating fish, you absolutely should learn which are the fish that are the lowest in mercury, because, I mean, this really, I don't think that there's anybody, any system that's watching out to, like, catch those fish that have a whole lot of mercury in them and make sure that they get diverted and not be sold in the store.
Right.
That's just not going on in the world today.
So the fish you definitely avoid are sharks, swordfish, king mackerel, teal fish are the big ones to avoid. And there's some of the tuna fish. And you basically want to limit your consumption of fish that may have higher levels of mercury in them.
Good. We need to go to break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert. His book is A Small Dose of Toxicology, and his website is toxipedia.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert. And his website is toxipedia.org, T-O-X-I-P-E-D-I-A.org. Tell us some of the other places we might encounter mercury.
So, yeah, that's a good question. So I'll give you another example of mercury, because it's a good antifungal, antibacterial agent. So it's put in paint, and is often used in, like, bathrooms because it killed mold. And the problem was that a little bit of mercury evaporates from the paint. So in 1990, I think it was 1990 or early 1990s, a family painted their baby's room, a baby boy's room, with mercury-based paint, not understanding the consequence of that. And the mercury actually, the kid evaporated from the walls, and the child absorbed that mercury and got toxic effects from the mercury exposure. So that was one of the things we tried to limit mercury. And by and large, it's been a huge effort to limit the distribution of mercury in the environment. And I really
wait. Do they still put mercury in paint?
No, they stopped doing that. So in 1991, I believe, they stopped putting mercury in paint because it was, you know, many people thought it was good. I mean, mercury is good. It's very toxic. It's good for stopping growth of mold and other bacteria and fungus, because it is toxic. But the consequences can be hazardous to human health, too, and that's why they stopped putting mercury in paint.
Yeah. Okay, good. I just wanted to make
but
sure
I really
that...
want to emphasize okay. that mercury is in coal. And so our action of trying to reduce the amount of electricity use is actually very important, because reducing electricity use reduces the need for coal-fired utility plants. And this has been an ongoing struggle across the United States. And for example, in Washington State, there's a big battle about trying to ship coal to China. And China burns coal, and we end up with that mercury that contaminates the Pacific Ocean. So our use of electricity is directly related to the mercury in fish, which is related to our health. So using compact fluorescent light bulbs, better yet, switching to LEDs, trying to reduce your mercury or your electricity use. And this year, I put solar panels on the roof of my house.
Yay.
Trying to reduce the amount of electricity that we're contributing to using. So I think all of us have a responsibility to try to look at the bigger picture and the consequence of our action. And mercury is one of those things that does have a big consequence, and there are ways that we can try to reduce our dependency of the technologies, the industries that generate mercury into the atmosphere.
I think that's a really good point, and I'm glad that you brought it up, because I just want to emphasize that we tend to think of environmental exposures as being out there somewhere, and we don't always see the direct actions of the environment being polluted with these toxic chemicals because of our actions. We don't. It's like if we were to open a can of gasoline or something in our house, we would see that was a toxic exposure to us in our house. But when we use electricity and other actions like driving cars and things, and then the pollutants are happening out there someplace else, but we're breathing that air. We're, as Dr. Gilbert said, the mercury is going into the ocean and that goes into the fish. And so we need to consider our actions and how they affect the environment, just as we consider our actions and how we create toxic chemicals, the exposures in our homes, because those things come back to us then when we bring those other resources that are out there in the environment, like a fish, for example, then we bring that into our homes. We've brought that toxic chemical into our homes. So there is this direct connection between what we do and what goes on out there.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, Deborah. I think that's a really important point to make, that we all our actions are small, but we have actions of millions of people, and they add up to big consequences. And mercury is a great example of that, where we need to reduce the mercury in fish, and that means we need to reduce the mercury that's being released into the environment. That means we need to reduce the coal-fired burning of coal-fired utility plants, which means individually we need to reduce the electricity we're using. And that also extends to nuclear power plants, because nuclear is one of the options. And trying to reduce the amount of electricity use also reduces the need for nuclear power plants.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And we shouldn't have nuclear power plants at all, in my opinion. And I just commend you for putting on solar panels. That's been something on my list for a long time. And it's just, can you just say something about that for a minute? Because they're pretty expensive. Did you get, like, are there programs to help with it? It's like, how did you make that happen?
So you're right. So Washington State is a really good state, has pretty good incentives. Right now, at the federal incentives, you get 30% back on your taxes. So let's say you put on a $30,000 solar power plant, which is pretty expensive, but you would get 30% of that back, so about almost $10,000 back, so the plant actually costs you $20,000. And with the advancement in the technology and the solar panels, the payback in a well-situated house is about 5 to 6 years, you know, with incentives. So, example, in Washington State, we can sell the power back to Seattle City Light. So I can sell it back to our City Light utility, and every August I will get a check for the amount of power I sold back.
Okay.
So I sold this in July. So last 2 months I've generated over 2 megawatts of power and sold roughly 1.25 megawatts of power back to Seattle City Light, which reduces my electric bill, as well as I'm going to get a check in August for doing that. So I think, and unfortunately, Florida, it's my understanding, does not have good incentives. You know, Florida, where you are, I believe, has a great amount of solar potential.
Yes.
It's not way underutilized because
it's
the power
way underutilized.
Yeah, it really is. You use it other ways, but it's possible that Florida could be generating a lot of power, but there's not good incentive for using solar panels in Florida because of the power companies have really worked hard to reduce the incentive to use solar power. So
well,
I think
what's going on here,
we have a long way to go. You look at Europe, and they're much more into solar power. Like Germany is trying to reduce its dependency on nuclear power plants, switching more to solar. And we could do a lot more in states like Florida. Some of the southern states could do a lot more and create incentives for individuals to generate their solar power right from their homes.
Well, so you know, right here where I live, they're wanting to put in a nuclear power plant. And they should just put solar panels on all our houses.
Yeah, you should invest. Yeah, you can take all the money you invest in nuclear power. We can get into all kinds of nuclear power issues, too. Maybe we should do a program on that someday. That is just not economically feasible. There's huge centralized power sources where we should really be moving toward distributed power systems. And, for example, my ability to feed power directly back to the Seattle City Light grid during the day when there's sun out. And which is, even to right now, I can look and tell you, I could tell you how much power I'm generating. I have a really neat gadget on the system. And right at the we speak, we're generating about 3,000 watts of power. And I'm feeding almost 2 watts of power back to the electric grid right as we're talking. So this this is a more powerful technology that's really well developed. And it feeds directly back to reducing our dependence on coal, reducing the mercury in the environment, and improving health for our children.
Yay. Well, we've only got about 3 minutes left. So what else would you like to tell us in 3 minutes?
Well, I would just want to say, eat well. I think being really careful about nutrition is really important. And watch the fish. And fish are also contaminated, like I mentioned, with PCBs and other fat-soluble compounds. So you got to be careful of those other contaminants in fish. It's not just mercury you have to be worried about, unfortunately. But watch out for that, because these fat-soluble compounds are also potentially harmful, particularly for the developing fetus, developing child. And mercury, encourage people to read up about mercury because it's widely used in the environment. It's got many different uses, and because it converts to organic mercury and methyl mercury, it gets into the environment and in our food supply. And we have mercury in our teeth, those are amalgams, which is inorganic mercury, and that's also a source of contamination. And just a sort of side fact on that, one of the problems with cremation is you cremate somebody, and the mercury in their teeth goes up the smokestack when it gets out into the environment. So there's many good reasons for not using mercury amalgams in our teeth anymore. And I generally recommend not to use mercury amalgams, and some countries have actually banned the use of mercury amalgams. And it's less common in the United States, but still widely available.
Wow. Well, we've learned so much about mercury today, and it's something that I know that I've had a lot of attention on as a toxic substance, and it's something that I think people widely know that there's a problem with it, but we've learned so much more about it today. So thank you so much.
I think mercury's fascinating. It's a great, great example of toxicology, how that we've learned more about that. We really recognize that very small amounts of mercury are harmful to the developing nervous system and harmful to our children's health. And we really have an ethical responsibility to ensure that our children can reach and maintain their full potential. I know I work hard with that with my grandchildren, making sure they're not exposed are exposed minimally to all the hazards out there. But we are responsible to that, and we have to look not only at our own kids, but also globally. What can we do to affect the global distribution of toxicants and child health around the world?
I agree. Totally agree. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. Again, this is Dr. Stephen Gilbert, a toxicologist, and his website is toxipedia.org. And his book is A Small Dose of Toxicology, and it contains a lot of what we were talking about today. So if you weren't taking notes, you can go look in the book and a lot of it will be there. And it's also the basis of most of the shows that we're doing. So it's kind of like a book that goes along with what we're talking about. Anyway, Small Dose of Toxicology at toxipedia.org. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. Be well.